to assume that all of you all may know who I am, even though I'm sure the majority of you are or do know. But I'm Jeff Eaton, I'm the pastor here at Hope, and I'm Laura's dad. And I am Tom's father in love. We did not really allow the in-law word in our house, and we often and mostly referred to Tom as our son-in-law because that's who he was to us. So I can speak for the Cannon and the Eaton families today and say thanks for being here. Some were here last night and today, and those of you who are here today, we thank you. We know why you're here. We realize that, and we're incredibly grateful. I'm going to give a series of thanks real quick. I teach and disciple our church that Christians are overflowing with thanksgiving. Thessalonians says, in all things give thanks, for this is the will of God. So we're grateful you're here. I'm grateful to Brian Ritchie and his staff at Ritchie Peach Funeral Home. They've been incredible to us, Brian and Danny and Wendy and Jesse have been incredible, and we love them deeply. Julie and I are starting our 24th year here in this area, and they're just really, really close friends. And so we're thankful. Thankful to my Hope staff here. Last night, today, guys in the loft, people putting things together, our pastoral staff, dear friends in our church have served us and served us well. And I don't want to go without saying thanks to them. I want to say thank you to all of you who are teachers today. We met many who Tom taught with in Anderson County. Here in we're in Franklin, but Anderson County, and then also in Fayette County. And I said this repeatedly last night, teachers have power. You have power. And I'm sorry that our world puts value on how much money you have or whatever your title is. That is not ordained by our Heavenly Father. I just want to tell you that. And teachers, you have power. You have tremendous power in changing people's lives. And we were able to see that through Tom's students last night who came. And most of us dodge math, especially advanced level. And Tom was an incredible teacher. And we know that because he taught us in other ways as well. So if you're a teacher, thank you for being a teacher. If you're a caregiver, our family is inundated with caregivers, whether we're pastors or a nurse or Laura has her doctorate in pharmacy, our whole family is dedicated to giving care. And if you're a caregiver in any capacity, whether it's the medical field or it's just in the spiritual realm, thank you for what you do. Thank you for especially hospice. They've just been incredibly good to our family, to Tom and to Laura and Jane and her days of being there with Tom in his last 2 weeks. Hospice, phenomenal, phenomenal people to Tom's doctors and everyone involved. And to Alan and Jane, I want to thank you for an incredible son. You raised an incredible boy. And we're grateful. And you had to share him. You shared him with Sissy, with Laura. You shared him with us. You shared him with summer camps. You shared him with mission trips. You shared him with students. Chris, you had to share him too. You know your brother. I just want to thank you so much for who I want to say he is, because he's not past tense with Tom. So I just want to thank you for being who you are. And I have to come to a moment of confession here. It's hard for me to do this one, and in some ways it's really easy. I never did think as a dad that I could find somebody on this planet to take better care of my daughter than me. That there is no one who would care for her like I do. And those of you who have daughters, dads, you know what I'm talking about. I didn't think he existed. And if he did exist, I didn't want to know him. But God brought that man in my life as a dad. And not only did he take better care of him, here's my confession. I stood in Tom's shadow of caring for my daughter. Even as he died, Tom was still taking care of Laura. To the point where I asked the question, would I do that with Julie? If places were switched. I met that man. I watched that man care for our sissy, for Laura, in a tremendous way. And I'm just going to give a challenge to dads out there, for not only dads, but to husbands. I hope I care for Julie in our days. And it's not that I haven't cared for her, but I just hope it's on the increase. And fathers and husbands, would you all take that pledge with me here that we care for our spouses even the way Tom taught me in that. I never worried about Laura. We trust Laura. We love Laura deeply, but I also trusted Tom, and I was thankful for who he is. There's a lot of things I could say. I'm leaving that up to my son for later on, but we want to do a greeting here, and that may seem a bit chaotic in a moment. I'll handle it. If you'll just follow me, we'll get through it. But we want to do a greeting, and Laura asked for us to do this. And in our greeting, we want you to greet one another, find out the names of people around you. Take your time in doing that. We're fine here with this. But as you introduce each other, we want you to tell each other how you know Tom. So it could be just a family friend. It could be a cousin. You could be whatever. But then if you have time and you feel comfortable, tell one of your stories of Tom. We loved hearing that. We loved seeing him on social media, of hearing stories about how Tom influenced your life. And I've got to say this. We played a lot of golf together, Andrew, Tom, and myself. And we especially love playing scrambles together. We love that. As those of you who know Tom, he's very analytical. He's a figure-it-out guy. Well, Andrew and me, when we play golf in scrambles, for those of you who know golf scrambles, there is a certain little games you play. Like, you're given a skirt. And a skirt means you get to tee off at the ladies' tees at least once in 18 holes. Well, me and Andrew, we'll just play golf and go, oh, man, we haven't used our skirt yet. And just don't read into that either, okay? But we haven't teed off from the ladies' tees yet. And then me and Andrew go, okay, we'll just do it on the next hole. Well, Tom could not stand that, because he's like, there's got to be the best place to use this skirt. So from then on, when we got the rules to the golf tournament, we just gave them to Tom. And Tom would take the scorecard and figure out where we could get the most yardage out of using that red tee skirt that we could use. And we just handed it to him, and he figured out our mulligans. We go, Tom, do we use a mulligan here? No, we need to save it. Okay, well, we're going to save it. Do we need to do this here? No, we need to, and Tom just did that in our lives. And there's a million of them. That's not my favorite, but it's just a description of him and also the fun we had for him. So on behalf of our family, I speak for Laura. I speak for the Cannons. I speak for the Eatons. God bless you. Thanks for being here with us on this just incredible day. And thank you. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to stand. We're going to introduce one another. I want you to share names. I want you to tell how you know Tom. I'll collect you back, and then we're going to have a moment of prayer together, okay? Will you stand? Introduce yourself to one another around you. How do you know Tom Cannon? Share a story in honor of him. Someone said, I have lost this crowd. And I said, all I've got to do is mention an offering and y'all will shut up real quick. That's all I have to do. Again, thanks for it. It did work. And thank you for that. And people were coming to me as well, telling stories about Tom. We're going to play a song that Laura has picked out. And it's we're going to pray while that song is being played. And as you pray, We're going to ask you to hold hands with each other. And that's really something we do here at Hope Church. And just I'll guide you in that. But as you pray, thank the Father for Tom, because he was a gift. So thank the Father for him. We ask that you pray for Laura, that you pray for the Cannons, Alan, Jane, Chris, Liz, Parker. We ask that you pray for our family, the Eden family. And we ask that you pray a blessing over the person beside you. Tom would want you to do that. And we don't need more things. We need each other. We don't need more stuff. Tom was not a stuff person. He was not a thing person. We just need more of each other, more than we do what the world entices us with. So pray for each other together. And then don't just leave it with a focus on Tom and his family. Thank the Father for the Son. Because without Jesus, our eternal life and Tom's eternal life would not be possible. And then realize that he, the Lord, is the author and the finisher of our faith. Let's bow together. Take the hand of the person beside you. And let's pray.
Might be a little harder than I thought. I'm going to read. That's pretty much so I don't cry, so bear with me. Tom would be very proud of me. I'm a very last-minute person, and things don't come to me until the end. Maybe that's my excuse instead of saying I'm a procrastinator. But everything seemed to come together right at the end, I think just the way he would want. So that was for you, Tom. He would be so honored and completely blown away by this support, and yet he'd still never believe he was amazing enough to deserve any of it. It would be easy to get up here and say all the great things about Tom, but I'm not going to do that for a few reasons. The most important reason is because there really aren't enough good words to adequately describe his personality, his character, and his faith. The second equally important reason is because that isn't what he wanted. He specifically said, "I don't want my funeral to be about me, it's for everyone else." Until the very end, Tom's utmost concern was everyone else, mainly me, but also everyone else. I will, however, give you some insight into this last year. It doesn't seem real. It was really messy, and it was raw. Our faith was and continues to be challenged and strengthened. I know many of you are struggling to understand, and trust me, I'm struggling too. It's okay. However, it's selfish of us to want the answers. We think we need them, but we don't. If we get so consumed on the why, we're going to miss out on the what, with the what being continuing to live a life with purpose and meaning. I know so many of you are frustrated that our prayers for healing weren't answered, but I'm here today to tell you that you should rest confidently knowing that they were. During one of our many conversations, Tom said, "There is such a healing in heaven." He is so right. Usually I'm the right one, but he's right. Tom and I were perfect for each other. He was my better half, my best friend, the person that was able to calm me down using only a fourth of the words I had used to vent to him. I fully believe I was created to be his wife and his helpmate during the season, and he was created to be mine. While I may have been Tom's physical caregiver, he was my support system and comforter to the very end. I am better off for knowing and loving this man and will always carry him with me. We had the kind of love that you're lucky to find and don't really want to or know how to live without. But I promise, babe, I'm going to find a way to be okay. That leads me to my next point, all of us. I want to leave you with some challenges, because Tom always challenged me to think differently, whether he realized it or not. Don't focus on the years we won't have. Focus on the years we had with him, and man, were they really good years. Love deeply. Choose joy. Be overly generous, and be yourself. He was absolutely himself all the time, and he never questioned it. I was able to fully know who I was because of him, and I was 100% myself. to his students. He loved you guys. And he loved his job. From the countless cards mailed to our house, it's easy for me to see how much you recognize that. He would want me to tell you to find something you love and do that. After multiple degrees and attempts, it's safe to say he found what he loved, and gosh, was he good at it. He would be so proud that you are here today, and for those that came last night, I'm proud. This is not easy for anyone. To all the rest of us, Tom was a learner, and I think that he would want me to ask you this question. What are you learning from this? I encourage you to be willing to let this horrible, horrible situation change you for the better. Find a way to take it and run in whatever way that may look like for you personally. I want to thank you for loving us. Thank you for loving our families. Thanks to those who cared for Tom and had to put up with me as his maybe too involved in particular caretaker. And thank you to those who cared for me and allowed me to be by his side. In closing, I'm going to share with you the words I told him daily, and this will be me sharing these words with him for today. Babe, I love you. I'm going to miss you, and I'll always love you. Thanks for coming.
Well, it is an honor to stand before you today. I want to say that a lot of people deserve this microphone. I didn't know I was going to have to follow that, which is incredible. Chris, I might have to amend some of what I was going to say, because I think Laura just knocked it out of the park. I want you to know that I'm not standing here today as a brother-in-law, although I am that. I'm not standing here today as a best friend, although I was that. He was that for me. I'm standing here today as Tom's pastor. Because that's how he asked me to stand here today. And it's an honor to do that. Even though I get a moment to say this, I thanked him when we had a time to talk about it. I thanked Laura today. There's a lot of people that have come through these lines last night and been here today that deserve this mic. And I'm going to do my best to be a mouthpiece for the many of us today. But first and foremost, I want to say some things to three groups of people: friend, family, and then ultimately Laura. To anyone that called Tom a friend, I want you to know that it's okay to have struggled with this. It's okay. There is room for this to be a club of strugglers today. There have been days that we don't understand. There have been days where we lose perspective, where our theology and our hope waver and crumble, where we find ourselves a weepy mess. And I want to invite you to a truth that there is only one person with perfect understanding. There's only one person with perfect perspective. There's only one person with perfect hope. There's only one person with perfect doctrine and theology. And when he was face to face with the brokenness of this world, he was a mess too. And what's crazy is he was a mess, and it wasn't sinful. Like, it might have been sinful for him to not be, because he was so appropriately and righteously a mess. He wept just like we have. Let's take heart in that, friends. It's okay for this to be a mess. To Alan, Jane, and Chris, the man that Tom became didn't happen accidentally. It happened because you all faithfully raised and loved him as a son and as a brother. You know, honoring your parents is one of those Bible rules that we've all heard, but there's a catch to it, is that the Bible, unlike the United States of America, didn't view this age as 18 where you're out from under your parents. When the Bible said to honor your parents, it's a lifelong commitment. And Tom did that and is doing that. And he's continuing to do that. He continues to leave a legacy and a wake that honors the canons and that honors the Lord. Chris, you told me this week that he was the best part of all you all together. And you did that to paint a picture of how good Tom was. But there's a hidden truth in that. There are some pretty amazing parts to be a canon. They're in there. And I've got to see that. I got to see that shown off, how God's graced you to stand tall and to be brave and courageous in this. Y'all show it off too. And I want you to know that I love you, and I'm proud that the thread that forever connects us is Jesus and it's Tom. To my beautiful sister. Whew, you have to give me a minute. You look stunning. You are stunning. And Tom would have been the first person to tell you that today. I have been witness to countless scenarios where you walk into a room anxious to model a new pair of shoes or glasses or dresses or pants or shirts. Tom, honey, do you like this? And sometimes he would say something that would lift you off the ground. But when I was in the room, he would usually shrug and say something sarcastic, and you would roll your eyes and say, well, I like them, and walk out of the room anyway. But do you know why he would shrug, sis? Do you know why he would shrug when you asked him how a new pair of shoes or a new shirt or a new pair of jeans looked? Because you can't improve the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Laura, you are the most beautiful thing, at least until Monday, that he had ever seen with his eyes. New shoes and new clothing and new accessories don't make the most beautiful thing better. And so it was a shrug, because it don't get better than you, sis. It doesn't get better than you. You had a spot in his heart that no earthly person could touch. If it were a race, I think of Gary and Lauren here, our resident runner friends. If it were a race, you would cross the finish line first, and whole seasons would change before the next person even sniffed it. And because of the grace that you have in Jesus, even what has felt immensely inadequate and unbelievably weak, the Lord has a grip on you so strong and so secure. And because it is, even when your efforts to grab hold of things over these past years have felt like stumbling in the dark, you're standing up here today raw, real, and vulnerable, but also so strong and beautiful and courageous and brave are some of the most beautiful things we've ever seen. Words can't begin to describe how proud I am of you. I've never seen, I was fortunate to stand on this stage on their wedding day. I've never seen anyone live for better or for worse in sickness and in health better than you. Proverbs 31 is a famous section of scripture that talks about a wife of noble character. It talks about you being a woman being clothed in strength and dignity, and certainly you are. But then there's verse 29. And man, this week, verse 29 of Proverbs 31 was a haymaker, because it's my Laura verse. And it says this, it says, many women have done excellently, but you have surpassed them all. Laura Cannon, many women have done excellently, but you have surpassed them all. Never the true words. And I want you to know that your mom and your dad and your big goofy brother love you. We love you. I had some stuff that I was going to say, and it's funny, you know, Laura mentioned that if Tom were here today, he would be saying, you don't need to talk about me, you don't need to do this. And I was sitting there thinking that I've gotten text messages from Tom as I've preached before. I've gotten mentions on Twitter that have happened, and you know, my phone will be sitting there. As I like to think of it as a clock, but a lot of times it's just a distraction. And I feel like I would have a little vibration on my phone today. It's like, if you talk about me anymore, we're going to have a problem, you know, because that's the truth. That's who he was. And he was a teacher. He was a learner. And then when he lived what he learned, he was a teacher again. And that's kind of the rhythm that he lived his life. And he's taught us a lot of things. Garrett and I were talking. Laura nailed it. He taught you to find out what you love and to do that thing. In fact, I told his students last night that Tom was one of the smart ones that figured out how to get paid to be himself. And that was a good challenge, just be you and figure out how to get paid for it. And he did that because he's a teacher too, and he's a learner. And what he learned is how he also taught. And, you know, he's taught us a lot of things. And he's taught us, you know, goofy things and serious things. And I'm going to really condense them. You know, he's taught us it's okay to have a crush on a restaurant because he felt that way about Zaxby's, you know, like. He taught us that it's okay to heckle with statistics in basketball games. You know, I remember seeing Tom almost get a technical foul because he was telling a high schooler that he was an 18% three-point shooter, you know, and he had calculated it through the context of the game. He taught us how to trust Jesus. He taught us how to be a man. He taught us how to love a spouse. For me, maybe one day to love a wife. He taught us tons of stuff. And he was proud to teach it too. He taught us how to live. He taught us that if his life, and this is where we're going to get to today, Chris sent me this in a text message. I thought it was beautiful. If his life and his experience could move someone just one inch closer to Jesus, that's what it took. He would do it for him. He would do it all over again. He taught us how to live. And today, as words that I feel like I've heard from so many people, Tom's teaching us how to die. And this is where I would get the text. It would be right now. And he would say, come on, stop talking about me. Because there's another lesson that if Tom's going to be a learner, that we can be a learner and we can learn today. And he would suggest that we not miss this one. Because in this lesson, Tom's not the teacher. Laura's not the teacher. Cannons aren't the teacher. Eaton's aren't the teacher. Jesus is the teacher. And that's what he asked of me when it came to this funeral, to make today about Jesus. And he said to me, I remember it, June the 8th, I took him a smoothie from Tropical Smoothie, and we were hanging out. And I didn't know what was about to be asked of me in that hospital room that night. And he asked me to do his funeral, and it was such a weight, and it was such an honor. I couldn't imagine doing it. I couldn't imagine not doing it for him. Because again, he didn't ask me to stand up here as a friend or a brother-in-law. He asked me to stand up here as a pastor and to teach what Jesus has been teaching. And there are so many things he's been teaching me, he's been teaching us. But I just want to give you three today. And here they are. First of all, we can be confident in Tom's gaining heaven. I would be willing to say that everyone in this room has had a thought or uttered a common phrase. That if anyone deserves heaven, it's Tom Cannon. Now, I've only had a small glimpse. Laura attested to it earlier. But I've seen him respond to people praising him over the past few months. And Laura's told stories, and she got to see it up close as good as anyone. He does embody the fruit of the Spirit, which he would be the first to tell us. That's not the fruit of Tom. Like, that's the fruit of Jesus, which is why we show it off, which is why it shows off. He's heard that he's the perfect guy, and I've seen him just shake his head because he knows the truth. It's not humility, it's that he knows the truth. Tom is not in heaven because he deserved it. He's not in heaven because he was good. Good people don't go to heaven. Forgiven people go to heaven. He's in heaven because Jesus purchased Tom at the cross. He said, you're mine. He said, your story, it's mine. Your sin, it's mine. Your cancer, it's mine. Oh, and by the way, my wealth and inheritance, it's yours. Tom's in heaven because Jesus saved him. And Tom's in heaven because Tom trusted Jesus. He worshiped Jesus, which we're going to do later. We're doing now. He lived for Jesus. There's not a doubt in my mind that Tom's sonship is not being fully rewarded in heaven. Number two, we can be confident that Tom knows how valuable he is. And at first glance, you might think that this is because we're talking about him seeing us gather and love him. He would no doubt be humbled by that. He was humbled by that when he was with us, when we would talk about him and show him off. And he loved you all. And he knows that you loved him. But that's not what I meant. See, there's a lot of things that cancer does that makes me really mad. And I didn't have the front row seat to it that Laura had or that Jane had. But it makes me mad. It robs a lot. It robs. It robs dignity. You become a reduction of the health that and fullness that you once were. And listen, guys, Tom is the most pragmatic person that I know. Nobody in the room was aware of his inadequacies more than him. Nobody. And it's not just that. I know that he hated it. I know that he hated being the one that needed to be served. And I know that he hated being a burden. And I know that he grieved being able to be the person that was doing the serving, because that's who he was. That's who he always was. And I need you to wrap your head around this, because think of the thing that makes you the most alive, that you find the most fulfillment in, that you find the most identity in. And imagine that being ripped away from you, and tell me how you would feel. Because all of us would feel pretty invaluable if we can't do what we're supposed to do or be who we're supposed to be. And Tom had to sit as a spectator to that in his own life. And he did it with grace, and he did it with sustenance from the Lord. But friends, let me tell you something. On Monday, Tom got to see what he was worth. If the value of something is what people will pay to get it, then Tom got to see that when it came to heaven, Jesus gave it up because he was worth it. And friends, so are you and so am I. You cost heaven, and Jesus paid it for you. He paid it. You cost it, and he'd pay it again. Jesus went from a rightful seat at the throne to being butchered on a tree for you and for me and for Tom. To own your story, he did it. And because he didn't spare his son, Christ, because God didn't spare his son, we get to see that his redemptive quest is to be a restorer of the value of those created in his image, namely us. And when we get that, friends, death is gain. And God is glorified because our satisfaction in what he's done for us becomes his glory in our lives. We lay it back down. And I'm confident that on Monday, Tom felt overwhelmed at how much it cost Jesus and how loved that he was. And this last one is a hard one. I'm not trying to go rogue preacher on this one, but it's a hard one. We can be confident that Jesus is still for us. And I told myself I was going to avoid the cheesy, easy Christian phrases. And listen, as people that have been mired in this, sometimes that's hard to hear. And sometimes that stinks, because you know what? Not every day feels like he's for us. It's been easy to doubt it. It's been easy to wrestle with it. It's been easy to wallow in it. How can I know that he's for us? How do I know that God's still for us? Romans chapter 5, verse 8, he said he demonstrated his love for us in this. He showed us that Jesus died for us. In Romans 8, 32, he says, he who didn't spare his son but gave him up, how will he not give you all things? How will he not be for us? Today is a sorrowful rejoicing. We know that Tom's in the best place. We're happy that he's not fighting cancer. We're pleased in that. But sometimes it doesn't feel like we're in the best place in the wake of it. We're grieving. We're hurt. We're filled with sorrow. It doesn't remove our joy. It just shows up alongside it. It accompanies it. But here's where we must turn, friends. Because I don't have this. If I don't have this, I don't have anything today. And so I got to get this out. And I got to let this one roll today. Isaiah 53, it says, surely he took our pain and he bore our suffering. And we considered that a punishment from God. But it was a gift. It wasn't punishment. It was a gift. Because he was pierced for our transgressions. And he was crushed for our iniquities. And the punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. Surely he bears our pain and suffering. I want you to see that, Isaiah 53. Surely he took our pain and he bore our suffering. It's all I've got. It's all I've got. And I would love to be able to tell you that that's the foundation that I stand on. But the more appropriate thing for me to say is that's the foundation that I roll around on and find myself in the fetal position on. But the truth of the gospel is, regardless of my posture, it's there and it's immovable in a season of suffering. And it doesn't need my stance to be strong. And surely we've all gone astray like sheep, each one of us. And let me tell you that when it's hard for me to stand today, Jesus didn't show up to take our pain today. He took it long before he knew you and I were going to stand in it. That's the beauty of the gift of God, is before he knew you were going to need it, he nailed it to the cross. That's the beauty of it. Before he knew that we were going to have a funeral today, he said, that guilt and that shame and that suffering and that pain, I bear that for you so that you can show up today and make it. And when the road gets hard tomorrow, and when isolation sets in and loneliness, and we find ourselves in that fetal position again, he took it then so that we could have a gift today. So that today and the next day would never be death, but the shadow of it. Oh, death, where is your victory? Oh, hell, where's your victory? Oh, death, where is your sting? Because before we knew we needed a foundation to stand on, he gave it to us. He gave it to us in Jesus. Because of the punishment he endured at the cross, healing's available to us at a funeral. It's available to us at a dinner table in the coming days and weeks and months and years. It's available to us in the future, pictures that don't include the people we want them to include. It's available to us in the holidays when there's an elephant in the room that's an absence because of what he endured, because he surely bears it. We have a foundation that holds us up regardless of our posture. If we just hope and trust in him, even if it's just barely. That the grip that the grace of Jesus has on those that trust in him is much stronger than the grip we could even begin to have on him. And I'm going to invite the guys to come back up. We're about to sing. In summary, I just want to encourage us to not miss these lessons that Tom would be encouraging us to learn and that he got to live fully in the reward of. The Holy Spirit encouraging us to learn those things. May we have eyes to see him and ears to hear him. May we be confident in heaven, confident of our worth, confident to know that he's for us, the Lord's for us. Psalm 137 is an Old Testament psalm that's written by the choir directors. They found themselves in exile, in Babylonian exile. They were kidnapped and captive. And their captors were asking of them to sing a song. I want you to sing one of the Lord's songs. And the choir director said, but how can I sing a song of the Lord while in a foreign land? Let me tell you, this land feels foreign. Never been here before. And you know what's true? It doesn't matter if it's Marquee Cancer Center or a mansion in Beverly Hills. This is a foreign land. All of it. It's not meant to be home. And so how do we sing these songs of the Lord while in a foreign land? We know that, one, they're being sung for us and sung over us. The Lord's mighty to save. He rejoices over us in singing. He sings for us. But another way we sing it is we know that Tom's inviting us to sing, because you know what? He's been singing the songs of the Lord, but he's in a homeland. And so he's ahead of us on this one, urging us, come on, sing. So we sing. And what we sing, may it fuel our hearts. May it be a gospel seed to our souls. May it be good news. I don't know how you worship. I'm going to invite you in a moment to stand. You don't have to. It's totally up to you. You can take it in. You can read the words on the screen as they show up. You can stand up, throw your hands in the air, and proclaim the same truth that's not just true about a Cannons and the Eatons and those that are suffering just the loss of time. That's a foundation that we mentioned. It's true for all of us. Laura has been teaching us all that everybody's got a battle. Everybody's got one. Whatever your battle is, he bears it, bore it, bore the pain, bore the suffering. And so, while our feet are in a foreign land, our heart doesn't have to be. While our feet are in the hope of a promise, our heart can be in a kept promise. And I'd like to invite all of us to join Tom in that. Even though our feet might be in different places, we take the encouragement of the book of Colossians, our heart can be in the same place. And I'd like to invite you to join Tom in that promise. Let's stand, or let's respond, and let's sing. Y'all, let's have a little bit of heaven here in Frankfort, Kentucky.